In our previous episode, part one of Why Not Me, we heard three Chinese students at Harvard describing how they felt small.
I asked my parents, how do people get on TV? They're like, I don't know. And so I was like, to my parents, why not me? Why can't I try that? And they're like, you're Chinese. Why would they choose a Chinese short, not so great looking person over a tall, beautiful American person?
Or who made them feel inferior?
She denied my ability to teach English simply because of my identity, an Asian guy from China.
Or why they felt lonely.
I think everyone will feel that one way or another, we are lonely sometimes, that we are in a place that we don't belong. It's like when we receive the admittance letter, we all think that we probably are the only admission mistake by Harvard.
In this episode, more students open up, speaking from their wounds and from their scars. I'm Mabel Chan, and this is a special edition of One in a Billion, part two of Why Not Me, a storytelling event designed for Asian students at Harvard to share experiences about bias and stereotypes. To the outside world, it seems they've made it. They're in, at Harvard. Yes, they are. But why do some Asian students here feel like outsiders, even as they're perceived as insiders of an elite institution of brains, power, and privilege? Where are they privileged? Where are they not? We begin with Kathy Kong's story.
I'm Korean American. I'm so thankful for this space. This lecture hall is actually incredibly meaningful for me. 2 months ago, I got here and I was really drawn by a lecture that Dr. Josephine Kim here at Harvard Grad School was giving. The title of her talk was The Damaging Effects of the Model Minority Stereotype. And immediately I was like, whoa, I've never, heard a lecture title like that. As I was listening to her, I felt I was getting really emotional, and I wasn't sure why. I realized that not only did the content resonate with me, but it was the first time I was hearing a lecture by an Asian professor, let alone a Korean professor. And it was incredibly empowering. Going back, I was one of those girls living under that model minority stereotype, the stereotype that, Asians are quiet, they're good at math. And that was the thing that was really hard for me, because I was the girl who just, I thought there was something inherently wrong with me because I didn't enjoy math. I was also the girl that really enjoyed English class, and I loved French. And the reason I loved French was it was the first time that I was able to learn a language and understand what my first generation Korean parents went through when they first arrived in the States. To learn a language from scratch is incredibly humbling. I realized the same mistakes I was learning in the French language was actually the same mistakes my parents were making in English. And I could no longer, be frustrated with them because I finally understood what they were going through. So fast forward, right after college, I became an English teacher at a charter school in Philadelphia, and none of my students look like me. The first question that I got my first day of teaching, so Ms. King, are you Chinese, Japanese, or Asian? So we had a lot to hash out that first day. Starting from that day, I started to, pull out a map and show them where Korea was. At the same time, I realized that as they were curious about my culture, as they were asking me and learning me about the Korean culture and my world, by educating these students, I can now say that there are over 120 plus students in the Philadelphia area who know where South Korea is on the map. Some of them might even impress you with phrases like 안녕하세요 and 감사합니다, which is hello and thank you. I realized during my time that my students were actually affirming me. And I also realized during that time, I was a huge proponent when there's a big movement in these schools to get more students, more teachers of color. And of course, I was like, yeah, let's do that. That's important. It wasn't until 2 months ago when I was sitting in that seat listening to Dr. Jo Kim and seeing someone that actually looked like me standing in front of a lecture hall and speak that I started to ask as well, why not me? I started to realize how empowering it truly was for my students to see someone that actually looks like me. So I'm incredibly thankful to be here. I'm incredibly thankful for this space because I know the next generation will be better for it.
Our next story from Sylvie Wong. Her drastic transition from Hong Kong to Maine for college forced her to confront her name. and her identity.
For me, it was always the first few minutes of class when the professor goes through the roster to take attendance. Strange, I know. But it gets me every time. It doesn't help that my last name is Wong. Finally, the professor mumbles, "Hugh Man?" Without fail, this triggers chuckles and looks around the room, as if the fact that my name sounds like human is the funniest thing they've heard all week. My name, Hugh Man, is pronounced in Chinese as Xiao Min. These characters directly translate to sunshine, active, and energetic. Instead of praising my parents, who apparently had impeccable foresight and encapsulated my disposition, hobbies, and strengths all into Chinese characters when I was an infant, I felt a sense of shame, a strong desire to distance myself from this rigid marker that distinguished me from the rest of my peers. Today, 5 years later, through articulating my feelings to friends and family, I understand that while these pounding thoughts were occurring only on my frequency, they stem from this inherent fear of being othered and are nonetheless authentic and powerful. I have come to understand that no one chooses what their name is, and no one chooses where they're from. As we acquire the tools and the consciousness, we are agents in crafting our own identities. Instead of feeling neither American enough or international enough, I am proud to be a hybrid, a jack of all trades, an active listener to children with identity and mental health issues. Thank you.
My English name is Helen Ho, and my Chinese name or Cantonese name is Ho Sam Tsui. I was born in Hong Kong. My parents and my whole family, besides me, were born in Vietnam. They were refugees, and then we won the lottery and were able to come to America. At school, being Asian and being similar to Sylvie, having a Chinese name, I was very much ostracized and at some points even bullied. I hung out with some Latino girls, little girls. We were like in the third grade. They would make fun of me and they would make fun of Chinese culture. I remember one time where they distinctively said, "Chinese people are so weird. They have arranged marriages. They get married when they're 11 or 12. And I was like, didn't know what to say to that. And I don't even remember how I handled it. Instances like that and little things here and there, like calling me China and just kind of making fun of me and making fun of my background and because I was an immigrant, but they were too. So then towards high school, I eventually became valedictorian, but I was also the one who was like falling asleep in class. And so I think kids didn't like me being valedictorian because they're like, why are you sleeping? And then, you know, and then at home, my mom would be like trying to get me to do chores, but I had to study. And for me, growing up, I studied because, one, because I was good at it, but also because it was a way for me to escape the feeling of so being ostracized and being so different than my family and also my classmates. And I continued to be different, and it worked out for me. I was able to get into the University of Chicago, and I was able to get to here at Harvard. Even here, I feel like when people see me, they don't see me as I truly am. They see another intelligent Asian woman who was able to get into Harvard, not a young lady who struggled with her identity, who suffered bullying, who lived in poverty growing up, and who went through a multitude of obstacles to get to where she is today. The question that I have for Harvard and for a lot of people out there is, why not me? Why can't I be seen as someone who overcame the obstacles rather than just merely another face, part of ethnicity that's just accepted to achieve? That's my story.
My whole life, I've always wanted to make my mom proud. She's a single mom. She raised me up in a low-income neighborhood. We've gone through a lot of things.
That's Tony Vu. His mother fled to America from Vietnam as a refugee. For a long time, Tony put a lot of pressure on himself to live up to her ideal of a successful son.
I felt like I kind of already downgraded myself, going from a doctor
to a dentist, to now a nurse. And these are all just my own impressions of what she thought of the world. And so I worked really hard to get into nursing school.
But he quit the nursing program at Washington University after 1 year.
I started just crying. I just started crying so much. I was like, I'm so sorry. I can't do this anymore. I really don't want to be a nurse. I'm not happy. I'm not good at it for the most part. I was just bawling just because I felt like I let her down so much. She still doesn't speak English. So all of this was done in Vietnamese. Vietnamese was my first language, but it's gotten worse over time. So this is all done really, for me, really difficult in my own language, just because I couldn't think of the terminology for a lot of these things. What she said back to me have really left an impact on me. And she said that she just wanted me to be happy and that the reason why she escaped from Vietnam was to provide for me and my sister a better opportunity and for us to really embrace our wants and pursue whatever we needed to do.
2 months later, another bombshell.
And I came out to my mom as being gay. I felt like a failure again because I couldn't have a traditional family that she would expect. So again, I started crying again. She was like, oh, I kind of already knew. And she was just like, why now though? And I was like, well, if I don't do this now, I can't do this for another year because I won't be back for another year. But I think we just have these, at least for immigrant, my own immigrant experience, I have a lot of these perceptions that my mom wouldn't be accepting of my queer choice, of my love choice. And it's just the complete opposite. So she started asking questions. She was like, have you had a partner before? What does he do? How much does he make? So he's a social worker. I'm like, I think there's going to be more hurdles that I'll have to ask. Hey, mom, I have something to tell you. But I'm a little bit more ready for this now after sharing these two big hurdles. So that's my story.
Our next storyteller is Jun Dong Wu from China. He first told us the real life story of Mr. A, a typical Chinese farmer who raised pigs in a village. What's unique about Mr. A was his passion for reading. He read a lot of books and magazines, so much that he was noticed and got elected to be principal of a local middle school, a big deal in China. But things got worse quickly.
It was early 1960s in China. The Cultural Revolution broke. At that time, Chairman Mao encouraged all the students to come to rural areas to live with a farmer, how to use practical knowledge instead of the knowledge from the book. So the middle school was shut down. He was determined to change the situation, to change the middle school. He devoted a lot of time to finding the students in his village to encourage them to come back to school, and he made it. Even though he suffered a lot during that 10 years, but he sustained that middle school after the Cultural Revolution. He developed lung cancer. Not long, he died. And Mr. A is my grandpa. My grandpa has the most profound impact on me. It makes me believe not only education is so important that impact people, but also the spirit of public service. I didn't realize that. I didn't know the story. Before he died, I was just like any naughty boy at that time, go to the net bars, play the video games day and night. I skip all the classes when necessary. Yeah, even not necessary. But after that, I just realized my life should be different. I just changed my lifestyle and then study hard. And I became the first person in my whole family to go to Beijing to study and in a top university of China. So Harvard opened a new life for me. In Kennedy School, even there is very diverse, but people have bias. If you say you like come from China, okay, your media is not good. So what your opinion is biased. So whatever you say. So at that time, I was kind of frustrated. But whenever I feel frustrated and feel hard choices to make, I will think of Mr. A, my grandpa. And will remind me my passion, like to make education accessible to others. This become my lifelong mission. I started a nonprofit education program for rural migrant workers in Beijing, even though my major is a lucrative business major in China, but I spent most of my extra time doing the education nonprofit. Nowadays, whenever I again feel frustrated, I will think of the scenario in 2017, in a sunny afternoon in May, that my parents, who has never ever been abroad, would stand in Harvard Yard besides John Harvard statue and take a selfie with me and the John Harvard statue and then post it in WeChat or Weixin and say, I was so proud my son has graduated from Harvard. And I also believe Mr. A will also stand in the sky and look at me, remind me, oh little boy, this is just a new start. Don't be so proud of yourself. It's just a new start. Remember who you are. And thank you very much.
Remember who you are. It's not always easy to look back at our roots, be they in China, Korea, Vietnam, because so much of our everyday life and struggle in America push us to look forward, never back. But that's exactly where we must also look, within our past, reminding ourselves how far we've come. Our Asian heritage, our personal history, and immigrant experiences are fertile grounds for the seeds of our American dream. All that variety and richness are perhaps part of what got us into a place like Harvard. We all belong here because this is where we've landed. Through storytelling, we own the key to unlock the fears we've locked within ourselves. As we go through life, we'll also come to see we have the power to change the lock, change the key, change our own story as we change the way we see the world, our experiences, and ourselves. Next month, we'll launch a special holiday edition about family, growing up, and dreaming of a new beginning. Do you have a story to share with us? Just go to our Facebook page or website, pitchastory@chinapersonified.com, or email me your audio story, maximum 5 minutes. I'm Mabel Chan. This has been a special edition of One in a Billion.